led by award-winning percussionist Rick Shadrach Lazar, it's the Samba Squad with Bateria, based on the Brazilian tradition of samba. The Samba Squad follows the tradition of the drum. This is from their 2006 album, Batuque. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead. Glad you could join me. And always tell people you're tuning in to the greatest program on the planet. And it's the greatest because you're also on it. Take some credit for yourself. At least do that. And today, a program I hope you would find fascinating and worthy of your involvement, or direct involvement, as a matter of fact. And it concerns a subject that you should be familiar with by now. And the subject, I hate to call it that, the subject is a person named Andrew Yang. A brash lawyer, entrepreneur from New York City, who last year made a bid for president. He was among the many political casualties of the Biden campaign. Yang made an independent bid for mayor of New York City earlier this year, but couldn't overcome popular support for Democrat Eric Adams, a former borough president of Brooklyn, and I should mention, also a former police officer. As an independent candidate running under the Forward Party that he founded, Yang once again has his eyes set on public office. He may or may not succeed, but his political attempts do raise an important question. What does or will it take to break the stranglehold on politics that both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party seem to have? That's a question today. What does it take, or what will it take, to break that stranglehold? This is not to say that the people who have tried and did not succeed in doing so are at fault because they didn't run competent campaigns. But it does say that something is worth studying when it comes to the fact that in a United States that boasts its plurality and its varied constituencies, it's been either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. It's a two-party hegemony that we have been living with for quite a long time. Will anything break it? If so, what? Are the insurgent candidates doing something wrong or not doing anything, a particular thing at all? That's the question we have today. What will it take for the United States political system to become really, truly a plural system where people, simply because they are new or simply because they have ideas that are outside of the parameters of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, don't stand a chance of getting heard or even succeeding at public office? So that is your task today. I should say our task, because I'm listening in. I want to know, what do you think is the reason that we can't get out, or we can't seem to get out of this Democratic Party, Republican Party duality? Why are we stuck here? And how do we get out of it? What has to happen in this country to produce a wider political choice, and more importantly, a wider political philosophy? 888-874-4888 is your number to call. And I truly am looking for your considered opinions here, not just off the cuff, but I'm sure you have thought about this question many times. Every election season, we go through the same thing. It may be different faces, but it's the same two parties. Is there no way out of this play? And we need a way out. We need some more new ideas, more new energy. Henry from Chicago, you start us off today.
How you doing, Eutrice?
Okay, how about you, Henry?
All right, I'm hanging in there like the rest of the country.
That's good news. That's good news. You're hanging in there. Disappoint your enemies and continue to hang in there.
Yes, I'm still here. This is it's an interesting topic that, you know, I think about a lot. But, you know, the one thing that we all have to have is patience when we're talking about trying to break the system. Because, you know, as people on the grassroots level, we understand that we're dealing with a monster when we're talking about the Democrats and Republicans. And it's a monster that's not going to be defeated unless you got billions of dollars. And in a lot of cases with grassroots organizations, we don't have that. Patience is going to be the number one virtue. Strategy is going to be the applicable virtue that we're going to have. So how do we defeat this Democrat-Republican duopoly that we have? Well, like I said, they're not going to be defeated overnight. They're not going to be defeated, you know, in a short period of time, because even though they have taken over the whole political spectrum, we're going to have patience in order to do it. Unless, like I said, unless $1 billion fall from the sky and, you know, we'll have the resources to do it. Now,
but Ed, I have to ask you right there.
Mm-hmm.
How long? I mean, this has been going on now for decades and decades. When is it going to be time for us to start thinking of another tact other than hurry up and wait?
Well, I'm not going to say hurry up and wait. But depending on the strategy that you come up with, you probably might have a good time frame on what, you know, on how long it will be. But what I'm saying is, don't promise yourself that this is going to end tomorrow. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying just wait. I'm just saying that it is going to take time. So I don't like to tell people, just wait, it'll happen. And this goes to an effect with, you know, you just waiting for them to fall. That's not going to happen. So for me, the first thing we have to do is withdraw from voting from Democrats or Republicans. That's the first step for us. Withdraw from voting for Democrats or Republicans. That should not be negotiable. That should be, if you have a D or R next to your name, you will not get my vote, period. Point blank, I'm not dealing with you. I don't care how progressive you are. You cannot belong to either one of those parties. And I think another thing is, when we start organizing political parties, I think the number, because this is the failure of some political parties, and I think, you know, some people have expressed how the Tea Party was somewhat of a success when we were talking about grassroots organizing, up until, you know, they started to be bought out by the big money Republicans. But their focus was not on big electoral politics, like getting a senator seat or, you know, getting the presidency or anything like that. Their focus was more on issues. And if there was any target of political seats, they started off small. They start off in city councils. They started off in school boards. And this is where the grassroots movement starts, because of the fact that you're not going to win those senator presidential seats, because there's too much money behind it, and we don't have that type of resource right now. You have to build from the bottom. And this is why I'm saying it's going to take patience, because we're going to have to take some losses here. There's going to be some losses, but in those losses, you have to start strategizing and figure out, okay, where we went wrong and how we can be successful the next time. So that's what I'm saying when I say it's going to take patience.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I saw a replay of the Ali Frazier fight.
Uh-huh.
And so you're the Ali today, and I'm going to introduce George Frazier. Now it was this Ali Foreman fight. Here's Ed from Queens. Ed, you heard what Henry had to say. What do you agree with? What don't you agree with?
Doing your truth.
Hi.
Hi. And Brother Henry, thank you. You took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, this is like trying to end the Democratic Republican monstrosity that runs this country. Is akin to turning the QE2. You don't turn an ocean liner at 90 degrees. You have to phase into it. It takes time to turn an ocean liner. It takes time to turn the Queen Mary 2. And this is what it is. And the Tea Party is a perfect example. Small issue-oriented people taking over local governments, specifically from the political mechanics, gerrymandering specific districts. When you take over your city council, when you take over your mayor, your mayorties, your governorships, your state senators, the ability to redraw districts so you can control voting blocks, because money buys votes, but districts elect officers. You've got to have a concerted campaign. It's going to be local, and it's going to take time. Educate and agitate. Educate and agitate. Let people understand what the political process is, good, bad, or indifferent, whether it was founded by racist slave owners. It's what we got. And there's been some successes in it. So you got to work with what you got. You got to, like Adam Clayton Powell said, you got to work what's in your hand. Take over your local district. Take over your school district. Take over your local city council, your neighborhood board. Have a common issue, a common goal, and work around that. And then, either A, you will take over the district and put people in that you've tailor-made, that you worked on to fill a certain office, or B, the system will bend towards you to comport with the growing tide. Because there are more poor people than there are rich people. And the bottom line is it's the haves against the have-nots. And if you can force, if you can scare those in power, they will comport to give you some of your goals. And that's where you got to make small gains. That's it.
So it's a fight. You admit, both Henry and Ed, you both admit this is going to be a big fight. A long fight, but it's going to be a fight.
It's going to be a war of attrition. Sometimes you feel like you're not getting anywhere, and you're going to have to revel in your small victories and keep the faith. This is not a 90-minute movie. This is a novel. This is a protracted battle. The price of liberty is vigilance, and you got to stay on top of it.
And just to add, when you're talking about warfare, when the smaller army is facing the bigger army, you can't face the bigger army head up. You have to use guerrilla tactics. You have to use hit and run tactics. And in politics, it works the same. We can't face the duopoly head up.
I like that. I just wrote it down. You got to use guerrilla tactics here.
Yeah,
the death of a thousand cuts. The death of a thousand cuts. The death of a thousand cuts. Keep on hitting them. Keep on hitting them. Every little gain weakens the beast, and it's going to take time. This is not a sprint. It's a marathon, and people got to realize that. And every gain you get, believe me, the other side is planning on taking it away. They've been trying to take away Social Security since the Great Depression. They've been trying to take away civil rights since the 1940s. From black codes to Jim Crow to convict leasing to the prison industrial complex. Their machinations are to keep you down. And you got to be on the same wavelengths. And every once in a while, just pat yourself on the back, dust yourself off, but keep it moving. The day you stop moving is the day you die. You got to be like a shark. Always moving.
Wow. Good Lord. If I were even contemplating running for office and I was listening to this program today, I'd be scared of you. I'd hire people to go find you and figure out how could we build on what you just said. Thank you so much for getting us started today, Ed and Henry. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcus.
From Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice. Thank you very much for letting me participate in this. As the dissenting Supreme Court justices say, the brethren are in error, I'm afraid. There is no political solution to the problems we actually face. The idea of third parties historically for 150 years has been demonstrated to be an easy factor for the rich to control. Look, take the example of Latin America and examples from the various states. Let's say that there's a popular reform candidate in Latin America that gets elected and you start to introduce reforms. Well, two things typically happen. The first is there's a military coup, usually supported by the U.S. But okay, say that doesn't happen here. Well, what you get is a capital strike. Investment capital flows out of the country. There's a lowering of investment, and the economy grinds to a halt. So the same thing would happen here if we ever had a popular reform candidate who actually achieved some formal level of power. Disinvestment, capital strike, grinding down the economy. And the reason is simple. In our society, real power is not in the political system. It's in the private economy. That's where the decisions are made about what's produced, how much, what's consumed, where the investment goes, who has jobs, who controls the resources, so on and so on and so on. And as long as that remains the case, changes inside the political system can make some tiny difference. It's not zero, but the differences are going to be very, very slight. If you think through the logic of this, you'll see that as long as power remains in private hands, everybody has to be committed to one goal, and that's to make sure that rich people are happy, because unless they are, nobody's going to get anything. You see, if they're not happy, everything's going to grind to a halt. You're not even going to get anything trickling down, you see. You know, so suppose you were going to increase business taxes. Okay. Most of the population is in favor of it. They all gab about it. But you can predict exactly what would happen. Business would run a huge public relations campaign. You raise taxes on business and, you know, make us uncomfortable, and you'll find that capital is going to flow elsewhere. You won't have any jobs. And that would be exactly what it would amount to. Unless you make us happy, you're not going to have anything, because we own the place. You live here, but we own the place. And that's why you have, like we have commercial entertainment and commercial sports, we have commercial politics. And the purpose of all commercial enterprises is to exploit the alienation and boredom of the public by perpetuating a system of certain conditioned responses to formulas. You know, it's not creative. It actually destroys the audience's ability to participate in a creative process. So to satisfy the profit motive, the commercial entertainer, like the commercial politician, has to give the audience what it expects, which is conditioned on what it was getting before, which was conditioned on what it previously got, and so on back into deep history. So this idea that there's some political solution when the politics doesn't control what the rich do, they can obviate and vitiate anything you try to do politically, as they clearly have done for almost 300 years, the whole exercise is just pointless. It's not all going right to work. We need to think creatively about how to address our real problem, which is not a narrow political one in this tiny little system they invented for us.
So John from New Jersey, welcome, by the way, and meet Marcus from Wisconsin.
Thank you.
What will work in the short term? I mean, Marcus has outlined an argument that basically, as the previous callers, talks to the need for time. We need time to get these things working and to work things out. In the meantime, what do you see as a workable idea? How do you work within the configuration that we have now, that we call politics? How do you change it or amend it or make
same
it work?
Same old BS. This is simple. It's going to take your life. That's what it's going to take. You're going to have to resist. No matter the
I'm not hearing you, but we need to talk directly into the phone because we're sounding like
your life. Everyone you love, lives.
Hello, John.
Hello, are you talking to me?
Are you John from New Jersey?
Yeah, I am John from Jersey.
Okay, we weren't hearing you well. So now that you're close to the phone, we can hear you.
Are we okay? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. You know what? I think we should cut to the quick. You know, if you want to get out of this predicament that we're in, it is going to cost you everything. It's going to cost you everything. It's going to cost your family everything. It's going to cost everything. Can I make it any more clear than that? These people spend their time thinking about ways to screw us. That's what they do. And I want to say us, I mean that's every diaspora. And I'm not even sure I know what that word means. But the two gentlemen that you have on, Ed and stuff like that, they, I have to say, they got their ducks in a row, you know, if that's a good way to start. But the bottom line is to resist. Not to do anything they tell you to do. Other than that, I don't know what else to say. Have a good day. Bye.
Oh, very nice and rude of you. Thank you. So, Leona, you will take the place of John. Leona from Michigan. Welcome.
Thank you, Eutrice.
Okay. I thought we would have a conversation, but we just experienced what some people think is conversation.
You know, I'm having a little trouble hearing you clearly. Forgive me. I don't know if it's my phone or what.
Are you hearing properly now?
Yes, I can hear you. I know you're saying something. Yes, ma'am. Go on. I'm listening.
Oh, that's terrible. But we'll proceed. So, according to Marcus from Wisconsin, we are in a situation, as he agreed, essentially, with Henry from Chicago and Ed from Queens, we are in a situation where we cannot
avoid the reality that change will take time. And the kind of change that we need is going to be very time consuming. Is there, in your view, any way of a shortcut to the solution?
Yes, ma'am, perhaps, yes. And we're out of time. We've been out of time, past out of time. We ain't got no more time. Now, I find it interesting that, for whatever reason, the DNC, the Democratic Party, and the GOP, the Republican Party, are both multimillion-dollar corporations. And I think it might be useful if each individual person becomes, in a way, their own individual corporation. I'm not talking about a corporation on paper or nothing like that, but become a person, an individual who has a mission statement, who has a purpose, who has values and goals, and who is not looking for a leader. If you're looking for a leader, look in the mirror and nowhere else. I think starting there might be a little different and might be worth considering, because everything else doesn't seem to work. It doesn't seem to work. We have not fixed the problem. People are still suffering. There's no justice in the land. We have not fixed the problem. These two parties, three parties, four parties, the problem is still here. It has not been solved. And this idea about power being in private hands, I agree with that. And I think those private hands happen to be attached to people who practice white supremacy, global white supremacy. Make sure that they keep the power, power over people that they classify as non-white, and they exercise that power in nine areas of people activity: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. You mentioned Mr. Andrew Yang earlier, and he's making an attempt to start a third party called the Forward Party, what have you. And it seems interesting. However, I'm hoping that it doesn't turn into another sheep herding type operation like Bernie Sanders did.
We're not talking about the Forward Party. We're talking about the concept of how do we move forward from this two-party monopoly?
Well, how do we move forward for it? Well, it requires, I think, maybe asking questions. I'm
all right.
Told.
Could you ask based, did you hear the presentation of Marcus from Wisconsin?
I think I heard most of it. Yes, ma'am. I think I heard more. I heard him talk about power being in private hands, and I think he was suggesting the need to think from another angle about this thing. So let me be quiet. Go ahead. Go ahead, Eutrice. What were you saying now?
Are you
there? Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm here. Okay.
Meet Leona
and
from
the way,
Michigan.
It's a pleasure to speak to you, Leona, in person finally, or as close as we can get to it. I've admired many of the things you've said over the years that I've been listening. Thank you.
Likewise.
Where do you think she diverges from what you have been saying?
I don't think it does, essentially, but I think what it does do is it shows that, unfortunately, once we're out of our conditioned political context of thinking, we really don't have anything to say. I think part of the problem is that we aren't even able to visualize what life could possibly be like
outside of this controlled system by the rich. So to me, it seems clear that the first step is to draw, as Mao said, and his value is not as a communist theorist, but as an insurrectionist, successful one, is the first thing you have to do is draw a clear line between ourselves and the enemy. As much as possible, you have to identify the enemy, which is what we haven't done. We're shadow boxing. As John Dewey said, politics is the shadow cast on society by big business. And we spend our time shadow boxing instead of realizing that if we are engaged as the war sees it, they see it as a class war. They think of themselves as engaged in a war. Just read the business press. It's right out in the open. I mean, it's reverse vulgar Marxism. They talk about dazzling victories over labor. See, they understand what they're doing. We don't. We're shadow boxing with the puppets they give us to go nuts over. So, let's think about it for a minute. How would you actually take over a state like this and run it along sane lines of industry, or some kind of popular control over industry, workers' control over the retail and factories and community control, and maybe groups federated together and all of that? We don't even know how to begin to think about that. We don't have a language for it. That's how far away we are from taking even the first step. There are people that, if you read counterinsurgency literature from the CIA and, going back many, many decades, they understand all of this, how it starts with political alienation. People on all sides, that you're supposed to be herded into two parties. Well, if both sides become alienated from that system, they understand that a couple of steps down the line, it means there's a revolutionary party in the making that might not follow the rules, and then they see they have real problems. So their job is to invest as much as they can in the propaganda and political system to make sure it never gets to that step where the population is starting to think for itself, which is the only way out of this. You have to think outside of the political, commercial, consumerist thought patterns that they have supplied for you. And of course, race is a factor. It's an enormous factor, but it's not the main one. It has to be brought into the mix in order to, in fact, there can be cadres of people who are starting to think creatively about how to deal with the problems we actually have, not just the symptoms of the problems. Even our medicine does this. If you're sick, it doesn't deal with why you're sick. It deals with the symptoms you have that are applicable to a pharmaceutical. The whole system does that from politics on down. And this is the system we have to get out of. We have
Let me ask Leona something. Leona, you've heard Marcus's presentation. Based on his presentation, how close are we to at least the first step of identifying the problem?
If I understand your question, I don't think I understand your question. I'm sorry. Could you say it again?
Marcus has outlined, given us a broad view, an overview of all the things that are attacking us at the moment as mm-hmm. individuals mm-hmm. caught in this two-party duopoly.
Mm-hmm.
How close do you think he is on the issue of what has to be done, how we should change our thinking, and what that change would involve for us to at least get half a step away from where we are now?
Well, I think he said what he said, and I agree with a lot of what he said. However, I think race is the main problem. I think no other problems, no major problem that exists between people of the known universe can be eliminated until racism is eliminated. Racism, and I mean white supremacy, global white supremacy, has done more harm it's done a lot of harm and is still doing harm on a global scale. And it's important for that to be included in the problem definition. I submit it's the main problem.
All right, but
I don't know if I'm answering your question, though.
Yes, but I'm trying to see where there is some kind of alignment in both your arguments. And
okay.
What you have said pretty much gives us an order in which things should be tackled. Is that the way life works, or do you have to walk and chew gum at the same time?
You have to, well, in order to solve a problem, I think you got to have the truth of the matter. You got to have a clear understanding of the problem in order to solve it, I think. And yes, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. You might have to do it, split second multitasking, do one thing here and then one thing there, split second alternating between the two. But I don't know. I guess you can walk and chew gum at the same time. But while we're walking and chewing gum, how much justice are we producing? I guess that's the question. How do we get to some justice, meaning guaranteeing that no one is mistreated and guaranteeing that the people or person who needs help the most gets the most constructive help?
Yes, but we're talking about a political system. It doesn't necessarily follow the line of social justice. Sometimes it's about practicality what needs to be solved immediately, as opposed to selecting problems on the basis of need at the moment. You have to make judgments very differently. And we need to at least get an appreciation for the complexity of the problem, which will determine the approach to the solution. That's one of the things we always do. We set out with a list. This is the list of our problems, and inherent in that argument is that we also have a list of the order in which we should tackle these problems. That's not necessarily what obtains in life. What obtains in reality is, what can you do where you are with what you've got in order to achieve some modicum of success? However, I want to thank you, and I want to also thank Marcus for some really great contributions today. We'll take
yes,
this break
you,
and come back, because you're
thank
more
you.
In line. This is really exciting to me that people are now talking to each other. So you see the logic of my craziness. First you get sort of prepared, and then we get into the fight. All right, that's going nicely. Thank you. We'll be right back right after. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're discussing the duopoly, the political duopoly, and whether we have a chance to fight it and fight it smartly, fight it well. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I just received a note about Ed. Ed, you want to have something said urgently. What is it?
No, I just had heard Marcus and the other caller talking. And, you know, all respect due Marcus, but I can't stand that. You can't, there's an old saying, KISS, keep it simple. You can't have that largest view when dealing with politics in America. It's always been a specific objective, and then you work around it. I mean, I would love to live in a utopian world where everything was equal and everything was fair and people could look outside themselves and be altruistic, but we don't. We're human beings, and we have certain human natures. We have certain human characteristics that cannot be denied. And the bottom line is you have to acquiesce to those things. You have to work with what you got. You can't imagine something that's not viable.
All right. Well, thank you for calling back and saying that. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. This discussion that we're having today, as you can sense, foreshadows other discussions that we need to have, but it's going well in that people are talking and in recognition of where we are, but also with an eye toward what we can do or what can be done to make life a lot better and meaningful. More meaningful. 888-874-4888. Zabby from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for this discussion group. Very nice. I had a question for Marcus. Is he with Revolution.com? Is he with the Revolutionary Communists and with Mr. Avakian, who has suggested a model for a new society, an ideal society, for over 50 years now. But I understand what I understand is he wants to, instead of he also wants to have everybody get together and decide how we're going to do it. And he hasn't been able to put that forward for over 50 years now, selling books and doing this and gathering people together and talking about having a revolution in a new system. And yet he has not been able to put anything together. He has the new constitution, the new Communist Party, etc. I wanted to know if Marcus had anything to do with that.
Well, Marcus is gone. He has done his duty, and he has made his contribution.
He's gone. I wanted to ask him a question.
Yeah, so he's gone. Leona also is gone.
Oh.
But you've put your question on the record, so we will follow up and ask.
Yes,
and maybe
in
the future he will address it.
I believe we should stay with the two-party system. We should fight it out, because I love what Ed said just now. We have to deal with the reality that we have. We, you see, the Avakians and the people that are with RevCon, they feel that it's not human nature, they say all the time, and lovely people involved, you know. But she, I listen to We Only Want the World, a program where she did have a guest host, Marcus, with her. And so she says at the end, it's not human nature, it's the nature of the system. Well, and so this is why, we've got all the focus on the system. But as Ed pointed out, you know, it would be wonderful to have an altruistic society. It would be wonderful to have the ideal. But we have to fight right within the system what we have now, because I've been fighting now for over 20 years. I have the website I told you about I encouraged people to run primaries, to fight, to get together in a group of people. I'd love to have Patricia, for instance, in this audience, and Ed, all of the people that call into you run primaries in their locations and have the ideas that we all want. We do want justice, just like Leona was talking about. We want to get some justice right now for the people who need it. And so we need to press these politicians, keep them accountable, the ones that are elected. That's what we've got. So we've got to keep pressure on them, calling them, keeping them accountable. I was on the phone. I'm always on the phone calling Washington, D.C., and also about your program about Puerto Rico that was yesterday, I believe. I was listening.
Yes.
And I called right away and spoke up for the Puerto Ricans to be included in the 3.5. I told Nancy Pelosi, you know what, don't settle for less. Include more people, help more people, and justify the need for the 3.5 instead of just caving in. You see?
All right. Well, hold up for a second. Marcus is back. He heard you and he has called back. So we have the benefit of more information shared again.
Thank
Here's
you.
Marcus. Marcus meets
thank
Zabby.
You. I'm sorry, miss. I didn't catch your name.
It's Zabby. Z for Zorro, A for Apple, BB for brilliant, and Y for yes. I'm on the internet. I have I've been fighting the two-party system with the gerrymandering and with now this voter suppression. But we have to vote. We have to fight it within the system that we're given. But anyway, yes, Zabby.
And I'm sure all the appellations that you apply to yourself and your name are absolutely true.
Appellations.
Number one, no, I am not a member of any organization.
Hold on, let me having a conversation, not a quarrel. Go ahead, Marcus.
We don't put other.
Marcus, I'm not hearing you.
I wanted to say first, no, I am not a member of any organization whatsoever of any kind. I'd be more convinced by Sir Ed and your argument about using what we have if, in fact, that was actually done. For instance, I would start with Article 5 of the Constitution, which describes two methods whereby the Constitution can be amended or altered. One way, and so far the only one ever taken, is by a vote of two-thirds of both houses of Congress. So the amendment is sent for ratification by the state legislatures. But the second procedure in Article 5 is very interesting. You might call it democratic. Two-thirds of the state legislatures can request a constitutional convention, which Congress then must convene. Unlike us, the original founders didn't worship the Constitution on their knees. They thought it would probably run into problems. Many of them thought it was bound to fail. Half of them wouldn't sign it. Thomas Jefferson said there should be a constitutional convention at least every generation. He said, because a man can't be expected to wear a boy's jacket. Well, as it turns out, we haven't had one. We had one constitutional convention, and if a constitutional convention is called by the people, Senator Sam Ervin during the Watergate years worked this out. He was deeply investigated Article 5, and he explained that once we the people, because I think he called us the true du jour sovereigns, once we the people convene our convention, we can change the entire Constitution if we want to. But this has not been done once. So for all the people who say we have to work with what we have, I'd be more convinced if you would actually use the constitutional avenues for real change.
Hello?
And actually employ them. But nobody does. It doesn't even come up in a discussion. People, you know, if all these people who love the system so much aren't even aware of the Constitution, then adhering to the system means I just follow my orders from whoever tells me what the system is.
Hello, 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 yeah. Hello.
Yes, Debbie, you're on there.
Yes, thank you so much. Right now, in process, we have Mark Levin and the conservatives putting together, trying to get the two-thirds of the states together to do a constitutional convention right now. And we have people that, in other words, the elite are controlling that, too. You think that we, the ordinary people, Marcus, are going to be the ones who are selected? There's a whole selection process to be on that committee. And do you think Utrice, they're going to call Utrice up? Do you think they're going to call you, Marcus, and we're going to be there? No, this has been attempted. It's already in process. There's 11 states that have approved it already. And they're looking to, there's a woman who wrote a book, a wonderful woman that I think Gary Null had on, and I've heard her. And she talks about how these people, these people on the right, the people with the power, and I love the idea, you know, you have it, you see it too. These people, these rich people are controlling us, absolutely. But this is already in process right now in 2021, Marcus. And we have to be careful because they're going to control that process too and take away our first, threaten our First Amendment that we even have. They want to switch that all around.
Exactly. So you're making my original point for me. You don't control the people, do not control the political process. The rich do. That's the problem. That's what I originally enumerated as the problem.
Hello.
See, we made an end run around it to discuss the point I made in the first place. You made it for me. The problem is, what are we going to do about the rich? Because nothing is possible political until we do. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, we're hearing you now.
Oh, is Abby? Okay, I wanted to say that maybe when you were calling in and you might have missed, my point is that it's going that I've been trying to get good people like you, Marcus. In fact, I said we like to have Marcus run a primary too. Absolutely, you're right, but I concentrate at the local level of politics. I have seen in the town of Riverhead, Long Island, there was, in fact, a revolution with people, ordinary people, taking over from the Republican Party, the majority. They became Democrats. They ruled the little town, but it only had five people to overtake. And they got three out of five. They had the majority. They could run the town, you see. And that is possible at the lower level of government. And so I concentrate at the lower level of government. And that's what I'm concentrating on. And, of course, you know, I leave it to that's where I believe we can get control of our own little towns and neighborhoods and communities and make changes for the good.
And I applaud your efforts along those lines. If you've decided that that's a battle that you can fight and win, then that's the battle for you to undertake. My point was is that no politics at any level, however, is going to solve the problem of the rich being able to control the system once it encroaches on what they see as their privileges and prerogatives. That's still intact. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it or it's pointless. I'm saying it won't make the overall societal change that will make the changes you want to make universal among the society. That's my point.
I think you both.
I just want,
for your contributions, and I think you're both on point. On point. Your opinions are considered opinions, and we should always honor that. Thank you all for your contributions today. It was a little twist on what we usually do, but I found it to be riveting and very meaningful and yielded a great deal from the callers who normally don't get a chance to interact with each other directly. So we did that for the first time today. I've done it before in previous years, but it was time to do it here today. And I thank you for making it a tremendous success. And we will continue with this format as well to get people to interact directly with each other and share their opinions. I thank you also for maintaining a high level. And so you are also teaching. You're teaching us. And that is, to me, the number one benefit of it all. Thank you, and let's get together again tomorrow to do some more talking. And thanks once again for tuning in and listening in, and pass the word. Bye-bye.